He was voted by the Sporting News as one of the top 100 players of the 20th century. A real folk hero in the game of baseball, and somebody who is famous, I think, beyond the sport for that. Somebody who has had a tremendous career and a tremendous life in baseball. We're very, very privileged to have on the show somebody who, point of personal privilege, at one time pitched for my Cleveland Indians. I speak, of course, of the one and only, the legend, Gaylord Perry, joining us on the program. Gaylord, welcome to the FDH Lounge. Good to have you on tonight, sir.
Well, thank you very much. And your Indians are playing great this year, aren't they?
So far, so good. Yeah, doing it with mirrors, I guess. But from your perch working for the Giants, you saw, I guess, a pretty ugly series over the weekend for the Indians.
Just a little bit, yeah. But those things happen. You know, you have losing streaks, and you can't understand why. I know the Giants scored like 18 runs today against the Cubs, so those things happen. Well, the Giants don't have that good a hitting club, but they have great pitching, so it's going to be an exciting year.
Well, you know what? Let's start with the Giants there. Let's start with your work for the Giants. I understand that, and this is the case, I know, where members of the organization will get a World Series ring when a team gets the job done. But beyond that, your connections to the Giants, the team that you pitched for just about a decade when you first came up, you were there in 62, your rookie year, the first great heartbreak in San Francisco, losing the World Series to the Yankees. We always hear about this. We always hear about these veterans that missed out on the chance to get the ring with the team when they were there. And you know, we heard about that with the Red Sox players, how many of the old players were so happy in 2004 when they got it done. Of course, you being involved with the organization gives you special joy here, but just as somebody who was part of that lineage of frustration with the Giants trying to get it done, what did it feel like for you? How great was it last year when they kicked the door in?
Well, it was really great, but you know what? When I signed right out of high school, I signed with the Giants. So I spent 14 years in the organization and got to know everybody like family, and it was just great. And, you know, when they called me for the Hall of Fame in 91, they said, "What do you want on your plaque?" And I said, "San Francisco Giants," because I felt like I was always a Giant. And so they've asked me to come out a few times, and I always love to do it and have a good time with them. And so then they retired my number a few years ago, and they kind of made me part of the family again. So it's been just great.
That really is tremendous, the kind of organization that they have there and the way that they got it done last year. It seemed to me from afar like it was kind of a misnomer when people looked at that lineup, because I think that the lineup got a bad rap as far as being a bunch of stiffs that were carried by the pitching. What it seemed to me it was guys who maybe were inconsistent over the course of their careers, but if you got the good version of Aubrey Huff, you were in good shape. The same goes for Pat Burrell and everyone else, and I guess to me, the only real surprise is it happened all at once. But if you knew you were going to get the best version out of all of these guys, I don't think it would have been a surprise to anybody, Gaylord.
Well, no, but you know, they seem to, if they get one for four, that one hit seemed to be the winning hit, especially they won so many games in the bottom of the ninth inning, and they just done great at home, and the fans are 40,000 every game out there, and it really lifts them up, and they might not hit 300, but the hits they get are so important, and they just score, and they never seem to be out of the game. If they only a couple runs down in ninth inning, they believe they can do it.
It was a heck of a run, and carried by the great starting pitching and the bullpen as well, and as you said, very timely hitting up and down the line. As far as teams you played for that had a strong run of futility, while it was a great chapter of your career being in Cleveland here and winning the Cy Young Award, we're based out of Cleveland, so that's of particular interest to me. But I know that there's always a lot of colorful stories that come out of those years, that crappy, decrepit old stadium. I loved going to games there, but I know a lot of people hated it. When we had Tommy John on the show, we had fun talking to him about that. Do you have any special memories about whether having to hang your clothes on a rusty hook in the locker room there, or Dorothy Fuldheim seeing you coming out of the shower, whatever the case may be? Any colorful Cleveland stories?
No, you know, the Cleveland clubhouse was kind of small, and it wasn't too exciting to go there, but it was better than some clubhouses I had on the road. So It wasn't the worst. It surely wasn't. I'd say kind of in the middle, and it was great when they got a new stadium, and they had some great years there, and they're going to have some more great years. They got some good young ball players. They got two or three guys that's got some age on them who is their leaders, and I just think it's going to be an exciting year, and they're not going to give up.
Well, one of the things in recent years, the last time they made the playoffs, of course, something that got the national spotlight was the game where Carmona and Jabba were pitching when the midge attack came in off of Lake Erie. Were there any memorable nights like that for you, whether it be the midges or mosquitoes or anything?
Nothing like that. We had 10-cent beer night, if you recall that. it was 10-cent beer, and everybody came there with $2 in their pockets and drank it up. So, yeah. It got kind of carried away after about six innings, and that's one game we were leading that game. We had to forfeit that because of that. But that's the only thing that kind of got a little scary in my time was there. So I was there 3.5 years, and had some good games, and I had some good teammates. That like 74 was the year that. I won 15 in a row, but it was the guys that made double plays, guys that got the hit and scored two or three runs in the bottom of the ninth inning to tie it up and give us a chance to win the extra innings. Those things you got to have, and they're doing that right now, and I think they'll have a great year.
Absolutely, and as you referenced with 10-cent beer night, a lot of times the most lethal kind of pests are the human ones, even worse than the mosquitoes. But something that I was a piece of trivia that I couldn't quite believe when I found it out. Maybe it would be easier for you to believe because the next place you pitched after this was Texas, so you got a chance to see what that was like there. I understand they'd done the 10-cent beer night without any incident down in Texas. There is it just a different breed of folks down there where you can ply them with 10-cent beer and not have a riot?
Well, they're used to drinking a lot more. So much hotter down there, and I think today was about 107 above it, and so you got to have plenty of fluids, and there's a lot of Texas beer down there. So, four or five beers don't affect them like it does the people in Cleveland.
Well, that's as good of an explanation as any, I think, Gaylord. The one thing there's a story that I've seen that's attached to you, and even Wikipedia doesn't seem to really know the true origins of this. So I hope that you can. I'm sure you can clear this up here tonight. The joke about you won't hit a home run until there's been a man on the moon. Of course, you hit a home run. I guess exactly 1 hour after a man was on the moon. Was that you that made that joke, or was that your old manager Alvin Dark that joked about that?
Well, what really happened in 64, I was taking batting practice in the old Pittsburgh ballpark. And batting practice, I hit the ball out very easily. And just I was a good hitter in batting practice, but that's it. Harry Jupiter, San Francisco Examiner writer, said, "Hey, Alvin, this year, Perry kid's going to home run for you." And Alvin Dark came around and says, "That'd be a man on the moon before that guy hits a home run." And the day I was pitching against the Dodgers and Claude Osteen was their pitcher, we had him almost solid about the third inning that our man had landed on the moon. And within the hour, I hit my first home run. True story.
That is unbelievable, Gaylord. That is one of those fables that could only come from the world of baseball, it seems like. But your career really went along very strongly, of course, becoming one of the few members of the 300 win club. Ultimately, what would you consider to be your career highlight? Was it that moment joining that select institution, the guys that had won 300 games during your career on the field before you made the Hall of Fame? What was the thing or things, I guess, plural, that jumped out at you the most?
Well, I think you got to have more than one thing. Pitching a no-hitter was very important. Winning the Cy Young in Cleveland in 72 was very important, winning 24 games. I started 40 games that year and had 40 decisions, so what I started, I wanted to finish, and I did. I finished a lot of them, 303 of them, so that shows you that I wanted to stay out there. And then winning the Cy Young at age 40 in San Diego was very important. And of course, winning the 300 against the Yankees in Seattle was also very important. And all those things got you to the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, it was a heck of a career. And, again, the everything that came your way between the Hall of Fame, the award from the Sporting News as far as being one of the top 100 players of the century, et cetera. Obviously, these were all very well-deserved. I mean, when I was growing up and watching baseball, you know, you were definitely right there, you know, one of the name of names of the guys that were out there at the time. Something that I found out subsequently in your post-playing career, before kind of re-immersing back into baseball as strongly as you have, I understand that at one point in time you did, at least according to Wikipedia, if this can be trusted, contemplated a bid for Congress. And I must say also, you're apparently a man after my own heart in that you at one point campaigned for Senator Helms. I once did a term paper on how he got such undeserved bad media back in the day, so I was very heartened to see that. But what were the thoughts that surrounded your contemplation of a bid for Congress?
Well, I've been working with Senator Helms and some of our congressmen, some of our politicians in North Carolina, and I had my home always in North Carolina, and they had been kind of asking me to run for Congress, and so I went to three or four meetings with some people and did some talking. I always would attend meetings that Jesse Helms couldn't go with and speak for him, but one morning my family called a meeting. I have three girls and a boy and my wife, and they said, look, the day you announce you're running for Congress, we're leaving you. I picked up the phone and says, I'm not running. So, yeah. You know, it was just the family came first.
You know what? I can understand that. I think a lot of people could. It does seem like you got to have your head examined to put yourself through the kind of rigors that are out there and the demands, both on your time and the things you have to do to conform. So I think a lot of people could understand that decision ultimately. Something that I'd like to ask you about just philosophically and kind of get your thoughts on the game of baseball with your very famous book that came out actually when you were pitching in Cleveland, your autobiography, Me and the Spitter. Obviously, the doctored baseballs, I mean, you weren't running from the scrutiny by naming your book in that manner. I'd like to get a sense from you of how you kind of slot this in your own head, some of the various ethical issues around the game, whether it be anything that's considered on-field cheating of that nature, whether it be the steroid controversies in recent years, whether it be the gambling with Pete Rose. I know that a lot of folks from the Veterans Committee have considered that to be the one unforgivable sin. So as you look at these things, as you kind of slot in your head ethically how these things go from you know, not exactly best to worst, but least worst to worst, how does it come out in your head?
Well, I think baseball has some trying times, but I think they handle it pretty well. They tighten up the rules, and which they should have. And you know, I love seeing Pete Rose play. I love his competition against me. He did something that I did not agree with, and a lot of other people didn't. The steroid thing was just part of it. Was in football, basketball, baseball, and I was just glad I wasn't a part of that. And you know, people cork bats, put stuff on the ball, just trying to get the edge. So, but you know, baseball is still very entertaining, and you know, you love your team you pull for, like you love Cleveland, and they're doing well this year, and that makes you happy.
Absolutely, and you know, you how much do you keep up with your old teams? Because obviously, again, you spent a very key part of your career in Cleveland. Obviously, you have a super special place in your heart for the Giants, and you're working for them now. But you know, some of these teams, you were kind of just there for a cup of coffee. Seattle, Kansas City. Do you kind of follow what they're all doing, or some more than others?
I follow them all. Like, I watched the Giants play the Cubs today. I'm watching Philadelphia play with Boston right now. So if Cleveland comes on, I'll watch them with great interest, and I'm pulling for them always.
Well, and as we said, you got to see both of them this past weekend, and what a series that was, and an absolutely beautiful ballpark. I have not been out there, Gaylord, but that's on my list of ones that I desperately want to see. I'm fascinated with the engineering of it. I understand that the dugouts are below sea level, and they had to build like a special bathtub type thing in there to keep the water out from the basin. That ballpark is just unbelievable, isn't it?
Well, you know, the investors, they got several investors that come in. They bought the land, built the ballpark, and it's just really kind of help the downtown area, the ballpark in, is built up in nice apartments, nice restaurants, and entertainment. And they've done a tremendous job by cleaning that area up. So baseball has been good to San Francisco. But, you know, they had a chance to go to San Jose, but San Jose voted it down. Then they were getting ready to go to Tampa and St. Pete, and McGowan stepped in and said, no, we want to keep our ball club here. And it took them a few years, but they built that ballpark, and it's just been great.
It has been just really sweet to be able to watch. As I say, I've only ever seen it on TV, but it seems like such an incredible marvel. What are some of your key duties and concentrations right now with the organization? How are you involved specifically with the Giants in your capacities these days?
Well, most of what I do is just they have me out there 4 or 5 times a year just to, for some great events. Like the last one about 2 weeks ago was a old timers game, stuff like that, and then I had for Willie Mays' 80th birthday and stuff like that. Just some highlights, and we love going out there, and we just enjoy it immensely, and look forward to the next trip.
Oh, that's living the dream, Gaylord. That's got to be a lot of fun. Getting to go to those things.
It is.